Hello, you're very welcome to Your Politics Live with Áine Lawler, Paul Cunningham and Micheál Lehane here at Leinster House. And it's been the week, Micheál, when the government's plan, we've been talking about this, debating this backwards and forwards for weeks and months. Finally, the RPZ zones, the rent pressure zones, the government's plan for the alternative, because they run out at the end of this year, was revealed this week. Except.
It's complicated.
You're saying it's complicated means you don't actually understand what's in it. That's what's happening here.
I think I do understand what's in it.
Okay. Speak.
But I mean, I suppose the great challenge already is the fact that there is an acceptance based on the analysis that underpins the decision from the housing agency that you will see rents increase in the short term. And the only way that's going to actually stop, the analysis says, is when supply increases. And there's an acceptance that that's anywhere from 2 to 5 to 7 years, given that the focus is on those big apartment buildings. And that's where the big change has been, because people who will be in those apartments won't have that 2% rent cap anymore. It'll be linked to inflation, so it could be higher. But along the way, there's all these other protections that have been introduced that makes it harder for tenants to be evicted, whether that's a guaranteed 6 years or longer if your landlord is a bigger landlord and has four or more properties. But the crucial bit in there that changes things really fundamentally, I think, for tenants from March the 1st next, the biggest thing is that every time there is a new tenancy, the landlord can reset the rate to the market rate. And already it's been pointed out that people like students or young workers do move a lot. And could they be hit each time with these major rent increases every time they go into a new tenancy? That seems to be a big, big issue. As well as that, there is the other short term issue that really hasn't been addressed yet. That is those landlords who might have properties ready to rock. They will now inevitably, many of them, hold them back until March the 1st because they can reset it to a higher rate.
Well, that would have a huge impact, for instance, on students looking for accommodation this autumn.
Yeah, inevitably. And it would seem logical that landlords might hold it back if they are driven solely by profit. Some of them are, some of them aren't. I suppose the other thing that's happening and confirmation today is that the RPZs are extended across the country. But that's an interim measure because they run now till the 28th of February and they will take in all areas probably next week when the new legislation comes in. But then from March the 1st, there's a new system anyway that takes in the rest of the country.
Okay, my head's kind of hurting, frankly, having listened to all of that.
So brave attempt, though.
Am I being silly, Paul, when I say, as far as I understand it, the Housing Commission report, they said rent controls ultimately are a bad idea and they stop supply in the marketplace. On the other hand, we now have average rents in the country over 2,000 a month.
For the first time.
Under the government's new plan, rents will go up, although there'll be controls and more security of tenure. Over the medium term, maybe there'll be more supply. And then there's a gap in between now and next March. And why could any landlord who could get market rent next March put a property on the market with just 2% or inflation right now?
I think from the government's point of view is that they are new, they're just in office and they're prepared to take some decisions now over the next 18 months, which are unpopular, but they think ultimately will deliver. So if they're looking at a 5-year timeline, they are looking back and they see the fall off an apartment building was around 24% over the previous 2 years. That has to change. So therefore, they're bringing in these measures to try and ensure that in 3 to 4 years, as Micheál mentioned, it could be 2 to 7 in when it comes to delivery. But by the time of the next election, they should be able to, they believe, point to say that things have changed. The apartments are being built, at least in Dublin area. That means that supply is coming on stream. That means rents ultimately will go down, so that there is a painful period ahead. There's nothing we can do about it. But the direction of travel is clear and they're hoping they can show those results.
But supply, and first of all, there's no guarantee that these measures will deliver the extra supply. And even if they do, it certainly won't be in the short term. And Micheál heard me having a rant in the office about this earlier. You didn't. But like, there's very little evidence that there's an awful lot of people out there who want to live in expensive built-to-rent apartments. They don't want to be paying a fortune in rent that is making some big pension company profitable. They want social and affordable housing. So we've had all this kerfuffle all week about the plans to try and push, incentivize, manipulate the market into doing what the market has not been able to do for a long while.
Well, I suppose the government would push back and say, well, you're clearly not paying attention to all of the things that we've been doing. So, for example, one of the things they're going to do is to try and ensure that the Land Development Agency wasn't going to have to pay corporation tax, that it was going to have more properties it was able to develop more cheaply. And they would say this was a big decision today, but if you go back over the previous months, they've been introducing other measures to try and increase supply, and that's going to continue. We've been looking forward in the podcast to the review of the Housing for All document due to happen in July, but the government's saying don't wait for a big bang. What they're going to be doing is taking decisions every week or 2 weeks
that's
to try
a little
and
bangs.
Change. That's a little. Something like that. Thank you. That was very helpful. And so this is like a rolling series of measures. But what you're doing is you're pointing back to the data. So last year, they hoped for 40,000. They told the electorate, what do you know, it was only 30,300. And the ESRI says 34 to 37,000 this year, but there's a downside risk. And if you're talking to some Fianna Fáil backbenchers, as I was talking to, they're saying they're not even sure that that's going to be met. And they feel that the sort of more senior members around the cabinet need to be able to prove to the population that it isn't just saying it's emergency, that they're seeing it, that those politicians are acting in that fashion. And so there is tension there, both obviously from the opposition criticising the government, saying you're relying too much on the private sector. But within government itself, within those political parties, there's tension too.
Yeah, then there's kind of worry, isn't there? And there is a sense too, even among the opposition, could this reach the point where people stop listening altogether and it becomes like hospital trolleys that people throw their hands in the air and say, well, can anyone really fix that? And I suppose politically, that is a danger. There's a danger too that this government is so young, but in some ways are some backbenchers already beginning to think about the next election and that beginning to get themselves ready for that if this can't be turned. The sense that the tide won't be turned. I think that is there, that is in the air. I suppose the other thing that's going to happen in the next few weeks that James Brown has been talking about is this thing that's going to deal with the viability gap, whatever that means exactly. That seems to be some kind of tax measure or some incentive for builders to build apartments. I suppose that's the next big thing that's going to come.
And likely to be a big row potentially between Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil?
I'm not so sure. When it came to the discussion on Monday night, wasn't it, Paul? There actually was no dispute there. Everything that had been agreed
went through
it enough. Yeah.
It's just, and I know we're going to, as you so memorably said, we're going to be getting a number of little bangs in the area of housing. But it's only 5 weeks to go to the summer recess. Planning a new starts down in the first quarter of this year. So we're already trailing. The ESRI has already made it perfectly clear that, you know, 33, 34, that'll be the likely outcome for this year, way below target. And there is one clear number, you know, for all the arguments about the 40,000 a year and so on for 2024. All through the election campaign, people were told over the lifetime of this government, we will deliver 300,000 homes.
Yeah.
If that is to have a chance of being reached, wouldn't we need to see something radically different soon rather than the trajectory of less and less at the moment?
I don't believe that the politicians in Leinster House believe that that target's going to be achieved right now. I just don't think they believe it. James Brown has been reluctant to talk stats, but he did go on primetime earlier on this year and said it would be extraordinarily difficult to achieve the target of 41,000 when you're starting from the base of 30,000. As I said, the ESRI doesn't believe it. And even people in James Brown's own party don't believe it. So achieving that is going to be hard. And I think that's why, particularly among sort of Fianna Fáil backbenchers, there is this sense that there has to be some projection. That if you're calling something the number one priority for the country, that the electorate needs to see that. And there's a sense that they don't, that yes, these measures are being taken, but more could be done. And from the top, from the very top. So to what extent those Micheál Martin and Simon Harris are able to agree and act, that's where it has to come from.
And so we're now going to get legislation in two stages. Is that right? How will that work?
On the RPZs.
So the first bit is kind of emergency legislation to bring in those places like Kerry and Donegal, that they'll become part of the RPZ. So those protections are afforded to all tenants in the country fairly quickly. Then the big piece of legislation that changes everything from March the 1st next, that's going to take a while to tease out, the Taoiseach said. So I think that's most likely one for the autumn. That's a big bill. when it comes true. And I mean, some of the detail on that, people have been kind of giving some conflicting versions of it through the week. So that's going to be comprehensive. I suppose the clauses around breaking tenancies do change there. And one of the big ones is when it comes to smaller landlords, that they won't be able to boot people out for the reason that they want to sell it anymore. But when it comes to things like hardship or immediate for an immediate family member, that will still be there.
And then the other question is, who will invigilate and regulate this? Because we have a number of different tier forms of tenancy that will now be operating across the country.
And I think that is key as well, is that, you know, the OTB has been under pressure. We've heard that it hasn't had
Rental
enough staff.
Tenancies Board,
And you've also got an awful lot of people who are not going to rent. One, because they fear that being branded landlord is now a nasty thing, but also the sense that the landlord's rights aren't as strong as it should be, they feel. And that if someone decides to go into a house, change the locks and sit there, well, then there's not much that can be done. So there's stuff on that side that could also be done to assist.
Okay, so lots more to come, lots more little bangs. We'll be covering them all. Let's talk about the row this week. Well, the argument between pretty much the combined opposition and the government, and this, of course, the motion on the central bank and Israeli bonds. The central bank has the nominated job since Brexit, chosen by Israel under EU rules, to check whether Israeli bonds are in line with the prospectus regulation. And indeed, the governor of the central bank was in this week talking about that to the Dáil and how that works to the Dáil committee. And we had another bitter debate and another government win.
Yes. If we start at the end, there was a vote on Wednesday night in relation to whether or not the Oireachtas would instruct the central bank to stop dealing with Israeli bonds, and that was beaten by 85 votes to 71. So a comfortable vote, even though there were two TDs who normally vote for the government, Barry Hennigan and Gillian Toole, who voted against for the second time. So notable. But the actual issue itself was interesting because this wasn't the first time it had been debated. It's the second time. This was a Social Democrats motion before that Sinn Féin. And I think this is another motion is going to come in a few weeks. So this is a rolling issue. The central bank said they were absolutely appalled by what was happening in Gaza, but it wasn't open to them as an entity to sanction because it went against EU rules. What they did say, notably, Gabriel Magaluf, was that if it was the case that the EU was to decide that it was sanctioning Israel, well, on that basis, the central bank would act as it had done in accordance with Russia over its illegal invasion of Ukraine. So it was saying, we can't do it alone. We have to be instructed. So that was sort of one interesting part of it. But when it came down to the tenor of the debate, it was nasty. And one of the things that really rankled with government TDs was accusations by opposition politicians that the government was complicit in Israel's genocide by not telling the central bank to stop selling bonds. And government TDs found it really offensive because they said, and this would have been Pascal Donoghue saying, that it's an independent body. The government can't tell the independent body what to do. And anyway, it's against fiscal rules. What are you talking about? So it was one of the really, really nasty debates. But my sense of it is that it's going to come back.
Yeah. And I suppose there is that legal advice from the parliamentary legal office here, which does say that you are entitled to pass this legislation. There's no guarantee that there wouldn't be infringement proceedings at EU level. But when it comes to upholding international law, a government or a state is entitled to pass that. That does sit there as legal advice. And that does make it very difficult, I think, for government backbenchers to explain this when it is coming up on the doorsteps. Equally, too, there is the point that Michael Fitzmaurice was making last night, that this was a motion. I mean, a motion isn't a law. It could have been used just to send out a signal. And of course, that puts more pressure on government backbenchers that they could have gone along on that logic, that as he presents it, just to send out that signal.
Yes, and the government arguing, you know, very much that trade is an EU competence and that they have been, you know, doing their very best at EU level to develop alliances and more agreement, and the EU now reviewing that trade agreement, but obviously still very divided, and 50% of the munitions going to Israel at the moment coming from Europe.
Yeah, I mean, I think that review of the EU-Israel trade deal is going to take some time. I don't believe that it was easy for us even to get to the position of a review, still less about the chance of all of the European member states rowing in behind this. So I think it's, once again, from the Taoiseach Simon Harris said this was the number one priority to go after that. But looking at it from outside, I can't see that there being very much success in relation to making that change at all. So when the central bank said, if the EU sanctions Israel, we will act, he'd be waiting a long time.
And then the other issue is the occupied territories. But I mean, the draft hasn't gone to cabinet yet. So, I mean, that means that pre-legislative scrutiny is going to happen probably late in June, early July. I mean, there isn't a hope of that passing before the Dáil recess. Now, Roderick O'Gorman talking about this during the week says, like, if there is another option and all that, the Francis Black bill could be amended. It is at second stage in the Senate. There is a realistic possibility that if there was a commitment there, that that one could be passed. And equally, Roderick O'Gorman making the point, as he has done repeatedly, that when the AG's advice came back on that the last time, that it didn't mention the need to leave services out of the legislation.
So these are issues. I think the temperature is going to keep rising on them in the remaining
especially five. When it comes to the recess and that deadline. And if nothing is passed, if you have one piece of legislation that is down at just completed its pre-legislative scrutiny, it's only at the starting line then. So the Occupied Territories Bill put off until the autumn at the earliest.
I agree, yeah.
The Taoiseach are talking today as well, wasn't he, about the timeline for the triple lock legislation?
Yeah, there does seem to be a clearer path on that one. That is in at committee at the moment, and the government to make it clear what they're going to do. He says the triple lock, as it stands, mechanisms like that aren't the norm any longer. And he says you do have to have safeguards. And of course, the draft legislation that is there talks about upholding UN principles. But equally, the opposition pointing out that there is an indefinite number of troops that could be deployed with Dáil and government sanction now, giving them a great degree of freedom.
So, again, another issue I think we'll be hearing a lot more about in the next couple of weeks. One thing we heard about this week, you kind of tend to trust payroll, don't you? But a bit of a problem that Jack Chambers had to bring to everyone's attention, Micheál.
Yeah, major problem. He said there's a real issue with that office that was in charge of the deductions for ministers, past and present, and also for retired civil servants. Some ministers may have not paid to the tune of €30,000 for their pensions. One staggering figure for a civil servant at €280,000, about €13,000 now under review. Most won't be affected. There's a particular focus on those who didn't work full-time hours. Now, some of the initial indications about this, even though it's going to external audit at the moment, is that this probably came down to interpretation of many cases, particularly for ministers, some of whom may have worked in the public service before that, then became a minister, and how things were interpreted could have led to the confusion. But it's an embarrassing one. Mm-hmm. And whatever way you look at it, this is problematic in getting the money back, isn't it? And how that's going to be
not so. The Public Expenditure Minister, Jack Chambers, said speedily. What money was owed to the state would be paid back. And he also declared that if the state owed money, it would be paid promptly as well. But he didn't exactly outline how that would be done, and he certainly didn't put a deadline on it.
Sinn Féin's finance spokesperson, Piers Doherty, was very exercised by this issue this week. But it does get back to this issue, doesn't it, of the state's capacity to do something efficiently.
Yes. And I mean, Piers Doherty's criticism had multiple layers. One thing he pointed out was that Public Expenditure Minister had been found out about this at the end of March, and yet the cabinet was only being updated in June. So there was a whole delay. He could have raised the flag, but he didn't. Jack Chambers had said he only got a full idea of it last Wednesday and at the first opportunity brought it to cabinet. So that's one part of the row. The second thing, when Micheál mentioned that €280,000 figure, like, how is it possible for financial controls not to see that? Over years, clearly there was a problem, and he said people are asleep at the wheel. And then the third thing he had was just this wider malaise, according to Sinn Féin, a wider malaise where you just have people winging it. They're not on their briefs. They're not on top of the case.
They're not at it, as they say in football terms. You have to be at it, don't
exactly.
you?
Exactly. Clearly yeah. not.
Not at it.
We learned something more this week, didn't we, about that controversy over the Arts Council IT system that didn't deliver in the end. And there had been lots of outrage about the Arts Council and all the rest. But equally, we learned, didn't we, at the Arts Committee hearings this week, that 60 times the Arts Council let the department know, an official within the department, that there were problems with these contracts, with these systems, yeah. with their installation. There were delays. And the Arts Council themselves surprised to hear that it hadn't been raised at a higher level. Yes, interesting, wasn't it?
I think it's part of a wider issue in how, once again, the government is on top of controls, what information is flowing from government, what information yeah. is coming back. To a certain extent, RTE in recent weeks has had been on the back foot in relation to problems it had with IT services and whether or not it was discernible in their annual report as to whether or not that was an issue. So I think there's a wider issue, not just limited to the Arts Council, and it doesn't flow one way. It flows multiple ways.
Mm-hmm. Let's wrap up with the presidency. And where are they all? Where are all these candidates take to the campaign trail?
I've got exclusive news for this podcast, which is that I contacted the main three parties, Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael and Sinn Féin, the parties who can nominate a candidate themselves.
They don't need anyone else. Type exclusive now,
it is.
I'll
change it tomorrow.
Take it to the bank.
I'll change it tomorrow. And basically, I couldn't find out anything at all. I couldn't find out what process would apply, when it would apply, when candidates would be in the field. Absolutely nada. But Micheál, I think, was picking up the same thing I was. When talking to multiple politicians across many different parties, the sense is that you don't want to have your candidate out in July, where for the summer they're going to get whacked by newspapers and media outlets because they've got no other story in the dog days of the summer. And you might be better to have your candidate coming out maybe late August. And then it's a short run into the November election. What do you think, Micheál?
Yeah, and even that date isn't clear. So the president has to be gone by, I think, is it the second week, early part of the second week in November. So when does the actual election itself take place? The 26th will be the bank holiday. So it's saying, people are saying probably won't be the bank holiday. So that would maybe the 17th of October might be the most realistic date now for the election. So it will be that short run in from the end of August to that 17th of October date.
Yeah, the best laid plans of political parties, I can guarantee you this summer, the newspapers, online, the speculation about who's going to be running, there'll be polls left, right and centre. I mean, the pressure will be there. And then, you know, one commentary, this, that and the other.
Still is easier than someone's name going forward and all the focus being on them throughout August about everything they've ever said over the course of their careers. And that does seem to be harder for people who haven't been involved in politics, doesn't it, compared to those who come with a political background.
Or in the public eye. So you want people who've basically been out there for so long that people know them fairly well already, who aren't being speculated about already.
I think like touching on what Micheál said then, who also are not going to be broken by a campaign, which is more of a beauty contest because of the limited powers that the president has. It really does get personal. What did Paul Cunningham do? When, where, why, how? Who knew Paul Cunningham? And if you're not, as Micheál touched on there, experienced in that, exposed to it, if you don't have the thick skin that politicians have, it can be brutal. And we know people who've been chewed up in that campaign. So maybe they're thinking...
Even people who'd been at the front line of politics for quite a long time.
And who you would have thought? Political parties talk about that inability compared to a general election or any other type of election to actually turn things on a day with a new story or a new initiative.
Absolutely.
That's totally impossible in a presidential campaign.
You can be a beaten docket in the second week of the campaign and have to trundle on for another 7 weeks getting whipped for nothing.
But the debates... Oh, the debates will be great.
Crufts, isn't it? Isn't that? Didn't Michael McDougall compare it to Crufts?
So between Crufts and bang bangs, little bangs, I think we'll draw a line under all of that there. And until next week, goodbye.